This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
Yeah, growing up, like, you never wanted to be looked at and you wanted to look kind of the same as all your friends. But deep down, like, I've always had this love for crazy makeup and hair.
You're listening to Jeans and an Ice Top, your go-to podcast when it comes to navigating adulting and the big life stuff. With me, Chels. With no guidebook, most of us are fumbling through life, trying to remember to take the bins out, with no real idea what we want to do career-wise, what on earth love is, and did anyone mention taxes? Through some oversharing, way too many cups of coffee, and some little nuggets of advice, I hope to make the existential crisis that bit more bearable by reminding you that you're not alone. And sometimes, it's about focusing on the things we can control and keeping things simple, like jeans and a nice top.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Jeans and an Ice Top podcast. And this week, we are blessed with the presence of the human rainbow herself, Polish gal, down south in London, taking over the internet by storm with her sustainable and ethical business, Carewares, the one and only Kasia Ring. In this episode, we discuss the highs and lows of being a solo woman in business, and especially the dilemmas of having to pivot in a pandemic and maintain sustainable and ethical beliefs in a clothing brand, which is a lot harder than you'd think. Kasia also delves deep and dissects her struggles with anxiety and her recent plight to obtain a diagnosis of ADHD, which I wasn't aware was really difficult to diagnose with women. And I definitely left this episode feeling quite educated on disorders that I still don't know that much about, actually. I also left feeling really inspired because Kasia is so unapologetically herself, and she offers some insight into how that is sometimes a slow burner of a journey, but once you do it, you'll never regret it. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I just love doing this podcast. I'm so passionate about it, and I realise my intros are always so rambly, but I just bloody love you guys and I love my guests, and this is just a dream come true for me. If you love it as much as I do, don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Follow me on Instagram at smiletohealth, and if you like poetry, check out my book on Amazon. It's called Curse to Feel. Ciao! Hey team, and welcome to the second season of Jeans and an Ice Top podcast. And this week we have the sensational Kasia Ring, queen of the pastels, avid rollerblader, founder of Carewares, a vibrant, ethical and organic vegan fashion brand, and just the human embodiment of a rainbow. She just brings so much joy wherever she goes and in everything that she does. I'm so excited to have her on this episode. I've known her for such a long time and we've both made so much progress and transitions in life, and I think you're going to get so many nuggets of really good advice and just some good giggles. So, hi Kasia, and for those that don't know you, tell us who you are and what you do.
So, first of all, thanks for having me, Chelsea. So, such a pleasure to be on here. So, yes, my name is Kasia. I am a 32-year-old woman from originally from Poland, but I've been living in London for 10 years now. So you mentioned I've got my own clothing brand, and yeah, I love my rainbows. I love my color.
You guys can't see right now, but I'll share a video later. Her hair is this stunning shade of flamingo pink with that. It's like a dip dye yellow at the bottom or green.
Yellow, but it's kind of a little bit green as well. Very slight.
I love it. But, and her hair changes all the time. It's like my favorite way to dictate where she is in life. She'll be like purple. She'll be blue. Every color suits this girl.
Yeah, I love changing my color. I get bored so quickly, so I have to keep it fresh every couple of weeks, change it up.
Do you do it yourself or do you go to a salon?
Yeah, most of the time. Every once in a while,
I'll
go to a salon. Sometimes I'll do like hair modeling sessions where they, you know, want to try out something new, and I'm the more person that is like happy to just be like, yeah, you can test on me.
Yeah, do what you want.
Yeah, but most of the time I do it myself at home.
That's so cool. The bravest thing I ever did was go brunette. That was literally it, with a box dye, and my hairdresser went ape at me. But yeah, I've not braved a bold color. I wish I could, but I know that it'll be sod's law that if I dyed my hair pink, which is the color I really want to go, I'd get an audition through that'd be for like Les Mis or something, and you need a natural brown or so not just yet. Maybe when I like walk away from that world or have a holiday, I'll go baby pink
for sure. If you want to try out, a best shade to start is like a pastel pink, because they wash out.
Okay.
So, pink tends to not last very long, so if you get like a light pink on top of your blonde, like
yeah,
not quite peachy, and probably in like 2-3 weeks it'll be gone. So,
oh, this is good to know. Maybe I'll do that for my hot girl summer. Go like a peachy. There's so many Instagram filters as well at the moment where you can change the color of your hair to see, and I keep going on the pink one and I'm like, oh, I really want it. So I might have to hit you up for some dye recommendations and
yeah, let me know.
Go from there. What's the favorite color you've ever been?
I actually really, really love being like neon green.
That is love that. Nice.
Oh, it's such a nice color. Green is quite difficult to wash out. So I only really go green when I know that I'm going to want to stick with it for a few months. Yeah. But I love having like a really cute pastel pink color as well. But because it washes out so quickly, it's just really high maintenance because you need to like, recolor it every like few washes. Like,
oh gosh.
Like few washes and you need to put it back on again. So I just go kind of in between different colors.
Yeah, I've always respected it so much. I think it's because I secretly envy the fact that I can't do it.
Part of your job, isn't it? You need to be more on the neutral side to be able to kind of
to work. So last season, because we were in lockdown, I was asking everyone what their favorite thing is to watch and what their favorite thing was to read. This season I'm mixing it up a bit and I'm saying, what are three things in life that you can't live without? And that can be anything. It could be food, a book, an item. Yes, you guys, tell me three things and why.
Do people count or?
Yeah, we'll let you have a person. That's a cute one. We'll do that.
I absolutely cannot live without my boyfriend, I have to say. I love him so much.
That's so cute.
I obviously have to say roller skates. That's my
yes.
question. I love skating so much. It's like been so helpful in lockdown and just like getting out and meeting new people. There's a huge community of roller skaters in London, as it turns out. So I've made so many.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it's so funny you mention it, because I'd never seen rollerblading. To me was like what I used to do as a kid, and I'd have my elbow and my knee pads that had got like Barbie on it. And then one of my friends, Meg, you'd love her actually, she always has like bright fun colored hair and stuff, has got into it and is obsessed. And then I saw you doing it, I've seen my friend Demi does it. Yeah, like how did you find it? Like what made you want to go into that?
So I think as most people, I just kept seeing these like stunning girls on TikTok and Instagram like looking absolutely fabulous on their skate, and just like seeing how like, you know, they're like dancing to music and skates and stuff. And then just that was like a really huge trend last year, wasn't it? Like literally everywhere. And then I remember that when I was a kid, I used to skate a little bit, so I was like, try it. So I ordered a pair, and the first pair I got was absolutely dreadful. The skates like barely moved, they were such poor quality, but because everything was sold out at the time, and I think like the stock levels are really low because everybody and so I just got whatever I could get my hands on. But then after a couple of months, I was able to get like a better pair and just completely fell in love with it. And as soon as I discovered other people was in my area skating and like made some friends, I really just like completely was obsessed. So
love it.
Since about like July, August last year, it's been like my main go-to activity. So whenever I've got some spare time, I just go out and skate.
And you can do it anywhere as well, which is what's so great about. And it's, I guess it's like a really good fitness as well, because I think in my head I'm like, I could totally balance on roller skates, but I went ice skating at Christmas. I know I cannot. For someone that dances, I have zero center of gravity, so you make it look so easy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like it takes some getting used to. It's quite similar to ice skating, so
yeah,
if you're not very good on skates on ice, then it might be a bit of a struggle. Everybody, you know, takes their own time, however long it takes them. And some people improve really quickly and some take a few months, but it can be enjoyable at whatever stage you're at. So I recommend it. Just get some protective gear if you do.
Oh, yes. To stop all the like scabby knees and protect. Do you wear a helmet? Do people wear helmets when they skate?
I would if I was going into a ball to like skate park. I can't really do that myself, but if you're unsure, then definitely would recommend. But I definitely don't put on my skates without having wrist guards at least.
Oh yeah, that's so true, because you'd put your hands out to protect yourself, so there's a lot of impact there. And the bones are, I'm learning about this, I'm doing a yoga teacher training at the moment and I've been learning about how vulnerable it's like weird little bit of your wrist is. It's crazy how much pressure we put on it time from like typing or just when we jolt and fall. So yeah, that's a good little safety tip.
My hands are absolutely essential to everything I do for work, so
yeah, not worth the risk.
What would be the third thing? I'm not sure, but like I do kind of want to say hair dye. It's like I'm just not myself if my hair is not looking on point, you know? Like I just,
yeah,
it's one of those things that's like if I notice my mood is not really good in whatever like stage I'm at. If I just make sure that my hair is looking nice and colorful, it always lifts me up. So
love that. I'd
probably say that. Some nice vegan, cruelty-free hair dye.
I love that. That's a really interesting amalgamation as well, because you never know what people are going to say because everyone's so different. So you've got your boy, hair dye and rollerblades. You're going to have a great time on this desert island. I say desert island, I mean...
Not too much sand, please, because that's going to ruin my bearings and my skates.
Oh, yeah. We'll make it... There'll be like a smooth tarmac surface, perfect for skating exclusively. Speaking of vegan, cruelty-free ethics, because that's the kind of movement that we both met in. I mean, it was very different when we started. I mean, all you could get in a restaurant was chips and salad, and nowadays we're like spoiled for choice. I went to Pureza for the first time a few months ago. The best vegan pizza I have ever eaten in my life.
Out of this world, isn't it?
Wow, what are they doing? It's magic. I need the secret. I've tried doing pizza at home and the cheese always gets stuck like behind my teeth, and it's just not the same. It's one of those things that just hasn't been done well, but Pureza do it so well and so right, and I'm really excited because I'm moving to North London, so I'm going to be close to it, so I will become a piece of dough. I'm presuming that your ethics and standing towards veganism is what kind of infiltrated your desire to create a company that embodies that, but was there a particular catalyst that made you start your own business, and what are the challenges you face in keeping it ethical and aligned with your views?
So the way it all started was kind of random, and it all just kind of unfolded naturally. Like, I never had any plans to start a clothing business or a clothing company. At the time, I was still kind of thinking of pursuing a career as a makeup artist, which is the reason why I moved to the UK.
And you are so talented at.
Thank you. I've completely abandoned that now, but that's like another story. But the reason I started making my own clothes in the first place was because some friends that I used to work with at the time saw the drawings that I was making, and they said that, oh my God, this would look so cool on a t-shirt. Like, you should totally look into this. And me being the crafty queen that I am, I've always been, I was like, can I do it myself?
Yes.
So I just started looking into how to do screen prints onto t-shirts, and then realized that there was a workshop where you could learn how to do that. And it was where I live. So I decided to sign up for like a one-day workshop where they taught you the basics, and it kind of went from there. And I was really lucky at the time that the cafe where I used to work at, they offered to, in order to support me, they would like buy t-shirts from me for the entire staff.
Oh, so, wow, that's so awesome.
It was really lovely of them, yeah. So they bought like 30 t-shirts of me before I even was able to properly start. So that meant that was kind of, I was able to sort of cover my initial setup costs. It was like literally £3 or something, but
it's so, I think it's so important to have that support early on and to know that actually people like, this is something you really love to do and are passionate about, and then somebody, you know, who doesn't really, they have no vested interest in supporting you really, apart from the fact they love you and what you do. And so I think to get that little boost to stop the self-sabotage coming in too early as well.
I think especially at the time, like, I was working as a waitress at a cafe, like, I really didn't have much to my name. So even investing that couple of £100 was still a little bit of a risk for me.
Yeah.
For them to just offer and to cover the costs. So even if I didn't end up selling a single t-shirt after that, I was still not losing anything financially because I already had enough income to kind of cover for that. So that was really great.
And it's crazy, isn't it, how much I know that the financial thing can be such a stopping point from people trying something new. I know when I did my poetry book, I went through the self-publishing route because I wouldn't have to pre-buy stocks of books. I could just do it all online, sell via Amazon, and I wasn't losing anything. They would just take a percentage, and it gave me the impetus to actually do it and go for it because I wasn't losing out. So the fact that, even though I know it was a minor risk and they supported you, like, the fact that you still went for it even though there was that risk is so inspiring, because I think that is the first hurdle, isn't it, to get over.
Yeah, and I didn't have any big plans, and I don't know if you remember when I first started, my style was completely different. Like,
yes,
drawing these mandalas because I was in this sort of like spiritual circle of people that were into meditation and that kind of stuff, and everything was very black and white because in my head I was just like, I need to appeal to as many people as possible, realizing that like you actually need to have a strong niche in order to be more interesting and like actually grab people's attention. But anyway, It took me.
And you're so colourful as a person as well. So it makes sense for your brand to reflect that because it's an extension of who you are.
Yeah, totally. And after it took me a couple of years to realize that actually the clothes that I am making, I don't really believe in them anymore because it's not what I want to wear myself. That's kind of when I started making the switch towards just making pink hoodies and really colorful t-shirts and stuff. And that's when it all clicked for me. And I decided to change my name. Not my personal name, but the name of my brand. And like, rebrand everything, new website, everything's covered in rainbows. And I'm like, this is it. Like,
I found my calling, rainbows everywhere.
And that's when I kind of started to find my audience, I think. And there was a lot of people that resonated with that. And I was so much more happy to put it out there because I was proud of it because it was part of who I am.
I'm 100%.
Like I'm pretending to be someone I'm not.
And it's so much easier to sell a product and sell something you believe in when it is authentic to you. That's like you see it all the time on with like influencers and things, and they're selling stuff they aren't passionate about. And you can tell it comes across. It's crazy how well people can read people. Yeah, I think it's awesome. My personal favorite is the oat milk.
Oh, thank you. It's the all-time favorite seller.
I love it. I mean, I am 99% Oatly barista. So, well, that I alternate between, I say 99%, I'd say like 45% Oatly barista, 45% minor figures. Barista oat milk, I really like them too.
I think the brand is called Khalifa, but a barista oat milk thing as well. And that one's really tasty too, I have to say.
Oh, I have to branch out. You always feel a bit more, because we have so much choice. I feel like I have to be experimental now. But then when I drink oat milk and then I'll drink something like coconut milk or almond milk, I'm like, why did I do this? Like, go back.
I've not bought almond milk for, I want to say, about 5 years. I do not.
It's horrible. It's horrid. It literally does not taste of anything. The aftertaste is gross. Honestly, I'd rather drink my own whey than almond milk.
One's so bad, but if you make it at home, it's actually really, really nice.
Oh, okay. No, it's like anything, isn't it? It's always better when you make it yourself. And Oatly does it so well. They do it for us. What was the inspiration behind the name?
Hairwares. So it kind of, it took me ages to come up with a name. But then one day, I think I just sort of wrote out like a list of words that come to mind when I sort of like my ethos and what I stand for. So things like caring, ethics, what I do, like I make clothing. So like wearing and whatever. And so I think like I kind of randomly was given this one pack of tape, like parcel tape that had Care Bears on it. And I was like, Care Bears, Care Bears, Care Bears. Like, I'm just smell like Care Bears.
Oh, I love that. And Care Bears are so cute and they're all multicolored. It's such, because I was going to ask, was it linked to Care Bears? Because the name is so.
Yeah, I still worry to this day if Care Bears is going to knock on my door one day and be like, you need to change your name. For now, I'm too small scale for them to notice me. So
what that'll do is they'll knock on the door and ask to collab. That is what they'll do.
It's a dream. That's what I've made it.
You'll be on, the Care Bears will be in your t-shirts. That's what will happen. So at the moment, is your business a one-woman business?
It is, yes. It's been a dream of mine to hire someone to help me out for the longest time. And I was so close to doing that last year. But then COVID happening and everything becoming a lot more complicated. And so practically losing, you know, like 50% of my work because of COVID and stuff. It had to be put on hold. But it's looking very likely might happen soon. So fingers crossed.
So exciting. Is it going to be your vision to expand and have like a team? And
hopefully, like I'm not thinking that far ahead yet. And part of it is because I am a little bit, I'm just one of those people that I'm worried I'd be like a terrible micromanager type person where
I
have to do everything. So I want to do everything myself.
And it's your baby as well. So it's so hard to trust other people to further your vision.
Exactly. But I need to slowly get on board with the idea and just like, I know that deep down, like I cannot really go that much further with it being just me. There's so much I can do. But the first step is to hopefully get someone to help me out with screen printing soon. And that will help me a lot with like the sort of manual labor side of things, because that takes a lot of my time at the moment. I spend a lot of hours at my studio just screen printing t-shirts one by one. like where I'm actually needed is like making new designs and it's like doing the creative side of things. But
yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people don't talk about in the initial stages. Like when you're a bigger scale brand, it's a lot easier because you can delegate, and it's so important to delegate as well, so that you can put all of your energy into that creative side, which is why you're doing it in the first place, right?
Yeah, totally. I need to like be a bit more mindful with where I put my energy, and like sometimes like cutting out tags and like attaching little strings to t-shirts and stuff is maybe like not the most bad thing for me to be doing, but it needs to be done, and it's just me for now, so yeah, we just do what we need to do
to make it grow.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you hit any difficulties with making it, maintaining it being an ethical and sustainable brand?
Yes, mainly with in terms of trying to expand it into different products, because I'm trying to kind of make it into a more lifestyle sort of brand, not just clothes, but I would love some like household products and things like that. So it is quite difficult to find suppliers to produce those kind of things that I can't do myself.
Yeah,
do the kind of ethical standard that I would like it to be. But you know, like we do our best, and it's like whenever I can find a more sustainable option and that I am happy to put my name behind, that's when I like kind of expand into new products. But it has been quite slow for that reason. It's a little bit hard, but thankfully the clothing side of things, which is obviously the main thing that I do, I've got like a really good supplier that is very reliable, and I can get ethical t-shirts from them and other clothing, so that's really good. But I would love to expand into different kind of products, like bottoms and like, you know, trousers, leggings. And at the moment I'm not able to find anyone that would be able to do that for me ethically, but hopefully soon where I can afford to do everything from scratch myself and like hire do it for me, not just yet, but hopefully in the next couple of years.
Absolutely, it's in your future. I think it's one of those things that's very difficult when it comes to sustainability and ethics, is that it's so easy to fall into the greenwashing trap, which a lot of the big brands do, and there's nothing wrong with trying to make your own little impact, and I think little things go a long way. And whenever I say for anyone trying to make changes, whether it's to like just eat one meal that's plant-based a week, or to just take your keep cup to the coffee shop, those little changes go a long way. But with brands, I find that it is really difficult, because you've got like your end of the spectrum that like is really passionate and really cares about the thought and the details behind it, and then you've got the bigger brands that are kind of putting these blanket terms, but actually when you dissect it in,
it's literally like very minuscule effort that they put in. Like a lot of the time you'll see like Zara or someone and be like, this is our new sustainable range, and when you actually look into what makes it sustainable, you'll find that it's like 10% recycled materials or something. Like really, like that's not good enough. Like do better than that. They can do better, they just, you know, it's not profitable for them, so they don't. Then there'll be someone like myself and, you know, other people that are trying to make a change and have sustainable small businesses, where we'll be so sort of harsh towards ourselves and hold us to such high standards that we'll like almost beat ourselves up for the tiniest things, like, oh my god, like I didn't recycle properly yesterday, you know, and like that will be something that we worry about. But I feel like we need to cut ourselves some slack in that.
Absolutely.
Time. But then again, as a brand, we're held to a lot higher standards than
most.
So we also have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite a difficult thing to balance. I know I worked for one of my muggle jobs, the non-acting side of my life, is a freelance social media manager. And I work for a company called La Pochette, and they're a sustainable and fitness accessories brand. So they make like bags and things like that to make fitness accessible anywhere. They're the same in that it's all in the details, like everything is thought about, but you have to be so careful, I've noticed, with like the wording that you use and the language, because you can never be 100%, and that's okay. You can strive to get there, but you can never quite hit there, because there's always something somewhere along the way. So I find it really interesting, and I think it's becoming more prominent and people are caring a lot more about where they're getting their clothes from and how much they're buying and how much they're investing in. And you've got the rise of brands as well, like Pangea with all of the ethical dye, which I think is incredible. And there's a lot of things, what is it, there's a trend at the moment on Instagram where it's like a rewear, and you'll post a picture that you posted in that outfit like 5 years ago, and then wearing it, rebranding it.
I've not heard of this. Sounds really good. I love wearing the same clothes over and over again, so I have absolutely no issue with that.
Yeah, I think there's so many, I think because we're an instant gratification kind of world now, I think we buy things in the impulse and then actually we might wear it once and never wear it again. And there's so many things in our wardrobe that we can, I know I'm culprit for that, and I'm trying to, like, that's the area I fall down in, so I'm trying to find ways to rewear items and make them better.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But yes, no, I think that you're making incredible waves, and I think it's really exciting to see where you're going to go. Do you have any advice for anyone that's wanting to start their own business?
I don't have experience starting all sorts of businesses, but when it comes to something similar to what I am doing, which is like a small clothing brand, I'd say one of the biggest things that I would recommend to someone is to start small, in a sense that don't just go and buy loads of stock, like don't buy hundreds of items to sell, because the most important thing for you to do in the very beginning is to kind of test the waters and see what works.
Yeah.
So say if you have 5 different designs, I don't know, like have literally 10 of each design and then see which one sells better and then put your money behind that thing. So if I have 5 different t-shirts and one of them is performing a lot better than others, I'll just, you know, place a reorder on that design, or I'll go and make more of them, because it's very easy to just buy, you know, oh, let's just get like a 50 of each size in every style.
Yeah.
You end up spending like thousands of pounds to get that stock, and then you just end up sitting on it for years to come because it turns out that actually wasn't popular with people, nobody's interested in buying it.
Yeah,
and then you're the one losing money. So I know, like, it's very tempting, because especially if you work with factories, they will want you to order more because it's cheaper and you can get much better price if you order, say, 100 items or 500 items. But in the long run, it's going to cost you more to buy something that you're not going to have any use for, so just be careful.
Absolutely. Be mindful.
And also it reduces waste, so that's another.
Yeah, that's so true, going back to the full circle. So I'm going to shift away a little bit now and say I love the fact that I know it isn't always that way, and what we present on social media isn't necessarily always the truth, but in a world where we're encouraged to act small and minimize every facet of ourselves that could be too much or too bold or too different, how did you gain confidence to be so authentically yourself and out in the open?
That's a good question. I think part of it is probably the fact that I come from a small town in Poland, where growing up, like, you didn't want to stand out. Like, it was like almost your worst nightmare, which I guess is kind of similar to many places, not just Poland.
Yeah.
But yeah, growing up, like, you never wanted to be looked at, and you wanted to look kind of the same as all your friends. But deep down, like, I've always had this love for crazy makeup and hair. And it's like, I'd go back home after school and just like spend hours doing my makeup in like the most crazy shapes and stuff, but then as soon as somebody would like come around, I'd just like quickly wipe it off so nobody sees. So I feel like it was just like years of that creativity wanting to come out in me, and it wasn't until I moved to London where I realized that everybody can be themselves, like nobody really cares because they're all busy with their own lives. There's millions of people on the street, and
London's really magic for that, isn't it?
Yeah,
I find as well that I'm from like quite a small town where everyone knows everyone. When I go back home, I'm quite like maximalist in my fashion choices. I wear really bold prints. I'll mismatch items. I'm not as bold in my makeup purely because I just don't know how to do it. But I guess to a small town, I'm very London in inverted commas. And yeah, it's not until you go back home and then you realize how in London, everyone is so free in every sense, in how you identify, how you dress, what you want to do in your life. There's no boundaries. There's no limits.
Exactly. And yeah, just moving here has helped me a lot. And I think it took me a few years as well, because at first, the first few years I've been here, I used to work for other people. I used to work in restaurants and things like that. And as much as like I could allow myself to have colorful hair and things, and you still have to wear a uniform, and you know, ideally like just black jeans at work, nothing else. And so that I was still quite timid back then with my fashion sense, but it wasn't until I was completely free to do whatever I want and working for myself the past few years where actually like there is no one telling me what I can and cannot do. So I just kind of go for it now, and I feel like, you know, I just dress for myself to make myself feel good. And yeah, I've always loved color, and it's all coming out now after years of being repressed.
The rainbows are just bursting out in all of their glory. There's like pots of gold everywhere.
Exactly.
Would you say that fashion has been, I know for me, it was a really, especially like when I was going through my recovery and things like that, and my body shape changed so much. Fashion was a real tool for me to recreate who I am and to form a sense of identity and relationship with myself. Would you say that the same was for you?
Oh yeah, 100%. Both fashion and my hair. Mm. It's just a way of expressing yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, we like to look good, or like not in a sort of like physical sense, like in
you like to feel good about yourself,
but like you like to look in the mirror and like see things that make you like, you know, spark joy, like Marie Kondo. Like I look at this stuff and I'm like, oh, these flowers are really pretty, like it's making me a little bit happy, like looking at it. It's just like simple things like that, you know.
I love that.
Just I've always loved bright colors, so the more the better.
As many colors as possible.
Yeah,
and I think it's like it's a slow unlearn. I feel like your 20s going into your 30s are very much like a slow unlearning of everything that you've been taught and believed in school. It's all about conformity and being like everyone else, not being too loud, not being too much. And then I think people go, that's why when people go to uni or they move away from home, they go so crazy, because it's like, oh, actually, who am I outside of all of these rules and regulations? Like, who do I actually want to be?
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. And I moved out from Poland when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
First, I moved to Norway and I lived there for 3 years. And just like being in a different culture with people who have different beliefs and stuff, that just completely blew my mind open.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And yeah, like I come from a sort of like very Catholic background where everyone is the same. Like everyone is white, everyone is Catholic, and everyone has the exact same beliefs.
Yeah.
And so like to move to a country where suddenly there was like people from all sorts of different cultures and have completely different belief systems, I was like, it just made me question everything. I'm like, shit, I don't have to like go to church every Sunday. I just is amazing. But yeah, it just made, like, that was the start for me to start questioning. That's when I started questioning everything. And slowly, just, you know, kind of like you were saying, undo like the layers of what you've been taught and how, like the way you've been raised, and just kind of pick out things that are actually you and are like kind of put there by somebody else.
And it changes all the time as well. I feel like we go through these constant pivots. Like the person I was when I like went to drama school is very different to the person I am 5 years down the line. And it's crazy how much, like when you look back at photos and like with things like Instagram, there's the beauty of that, of looking back at the past and being like, wow, who was that person? Like, I don't know who she was or what she was doing, bless her.
Yeah, we changed massively. I swear that Facebook and Instagram reminders from a few years back, they're just like a little notification to like help me remember to make that post private or something like
that. Yes, I've had to do a lot of untagging over the years, sort of all these awful like memories that keep popping up of being tagged in these dreadful photos, and I'm like, remove. Okay, like we don't need a reminder of that awful fringe or that idiot that you dated. We don't need a throwback to that. Yeah, I totally relate to that. Social media can be a bit of a bugger with that one.
Yeah, totally.
But you use social media in many positive ways, as we've already discussed. But one of the things I'd love to delve deeper into is that you're so open about going to therapy, struggling with anxiety, and then recently you got a diagnosis with ADHD.
Diagnosed just yet. I'm still waiting.
Oh, okay. Still waiting.
I'm still diagnosed. I'm 99% sure, but until it's official,
won't put the label.
Yeah.
But in your exploration of that, and I think many people struggle to understand maybe parts of themselves or what they're experiencing, and I'd love to know a bit more about your journey and like how you began to like acknowledge things like anxiety and delve deeper into solutions such as therapy. I'm such an advocate for therapy, and I think everyone should do it, whether you have a diagnosis or a condition or something that's particularly hard. I think it's so important to delve deeper into who you are and the things that have happened to us to get where we are. So I'd love to know more.
So for me, like I came to terms with the fact that I've had anxiety my entire life, basically. In 2019, it was after a series of panic attacks that I experienced at that time, and one of them got quite bad, and I ended up in A&E because I thought I was having a heart attack.
Oh, bless you.
And like I was experiencing these heart palpitations for like weeks. And I just drove myself a little bit, you know, crazy.
And it's totally valid to think that as well, because the symptoms are so similar. And I think we forget how powerful the mind is.
Exactly. Like my symptoms for anxiety can be extremely physical. So like especially at the time when I didn't realize that it was anxiety, because I just always assumed that, you know, those like anxiety would present itself through like the thoughts that you have in your head.
Yeah.
A lot of the time it will be just physical symptoms. So for me at the time was mainly like heart palpitations and sort of feeling of my heart was almost arrhythmic. And at one point it got quite bad where I my heart started racing so fast. I thought it was something really serious. I ended up in A&E, and then they ran all the tests. Everything was fine. I was still like obviously really worried, but
yeah,
thankfully everything was fine. I had some like heart tests done after that just to rule out any possibilities of anything serious being wrong. But while that was happening, my GP recommended that maybe I should see a therapist. She referred me to a local sort of like therapy and thing, and it was quite a few. I think I had to wait for my first appointment like 3 or 4 months. So in the meantime, I started going privately, and at the time I had a type of therapy called EMDR.
Okay,
I don't know if you've heard about this. It's this therapy where you kind of try to evoke painful memories, and the therapist like makes you like they move their finger and you like follow the finger with your eyes. So that's like erase the trauma response in your mind or something like that.
That's so interesting. I've not heard of that before. So
yeah. And it, at the time, like I wasn't sure if it was working for me, but like a few months down the line, I realized that, oh, actually I don't have the same fears that I used to have about a few different things that used to be kind of like my triggers. So yeah. It has actually helped me. And then once I was able to go to therapy through NHS, I started doing that. And I had CBT therapy for, I think, like maybe 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And when I started seeing my therapist there, I realized that, oh, actually, like I've been anxious my whole life. And I've learned that like I used to have, or I still have panic attacks, like every time I'm on a plane, for example, like flying. And like before that, I just thought it was normal. Like, yeah, my heart is racing. Like I can't swallow anything because I'm worried that I'm going to choke and die. And like I'm controlling every single breath, but like, oh yeah, it's what everybody does, right? Like
and I bet it felt so freeing to have someone say it's okay that you feel like this and this is what you're going through, and just to have kind of a classification to some extent, and then to almost have it feel a little bit, I feel like sometimes by talking and vocalizing with someone, or for someone to tell us, okay, this is what's happening to you, it just normalizes it a bit more in our brains.
And for me, it was very helpful in kind of like being able to detach myself from anxiety. And
yeah,
instead of worrying that, oh, I might die because my body is doing these weird things, now I think, oh, I am anxious, which like I know anxiety isn't going to kill me.
Yeah, you can remove it externally and go, okay, this is something that I'm have control over, that I can heal myself from, or like process.
Or in the least, like that is not as dangerous as me suspecting that like my heart might stop, you know? Like they're very different things. And it's like anxiety, like I can deal with it. I just need to wait it out. I need to like try to calm my nerves. So like I respond to it a lot differently.
That's amazing. Do you have any coping mechanisms that you found worked in particular, or obviously you don't have to share if you don't want to?
There's like a lot of very helpful exercises that my therapist taught me last year that I'm notoriously bad at implementing.
I'm exactly the same. They'll tell you something and you're like, that's such a good idea. And then you're like, yeah, I don't have time to do that. Sorry.
But definitely trying to look after yourself and, you know, implementing some self-care always helps, because I know that I tend to be a lot more anxious after periods of high stress and
overwhelming,
for example, or you
know, which must be really hard for you to balance as somebody that runs their own business.
Yeah, exactly. And COVID's made it so much harder because working from home and like everything happens at home. You try to relax at home, but you're surrounded by your work. So you never switch off from it. So it's very difficult to find that balance.
Yeah, I totally relate. It's you kind of feel like you work at home, you eat at home, you sleep at home, you FaceTime people from home. There's no separation. I feel for people that haven't even been able to, you know, remove, especially in house shares and things like that, everything exists in one room. So I definitely feel for people during the lockdown, especially if you haven't been able to get open space or remove yourself a little bit.
It has been a challenge.
Did you find it hard to reach out for therapy, or did it feel kind of a natural process that you kind of fell into?
I think once I embraced the fact that, oh, actually, like, I have been anxious ever since I can remember, I've like quickly come on board with the fact that, like, okay, I should go to therapy. And there was a period where I felt like, oh, but like my case isn't that bad. I'm taking away the service from somebody that needs it more. Yeah. And it was that kind of like me sort of like trying to gaslight myself that, you know, yeah, my issues aren't as important as other people's. But then, you know, I try to like, I managed to convince myself that, you know, I deserve it, sort of thing.
Yeah, you're worthy of that time and that care for yourself. I totally relate to that in that I'm a massive people pleaser and I worry about everyone else before I worry about myself. And asking for help has always been the hardest hurdle, I think. Like, I can acknowledge that things are going wrong. It's like I'm watching the warning level, the line drop to the warning level. I always use that analogy. But I think it's so hard to take that action to go, actually, mm-hmm, I need help too. I'm allowed help. It's not a weakness. It's not a failure. It's taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And then this year I've gone back to therapy because after, especially like the winter lockdown, it was
so hard.
It was so hard. So I called back in to get some more sessions. And this year, I don't feel they're helping me as much as last year, because last year was mainly focused on me being health anxious. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of sort of fears to do with my health. That was the kind of the thing that my therapy was mainly focused about around last year. And that was very helpful. But this year, they're trying to help me out with ADHD symptoms, but because the people who I'm getting therapy from, they don't specialize in ADHD, and we don't normally do anything to do with that. So they're trying to like adjust their regular therapy to that. But I've just found that the sessions were very short and just, yeah, not exactly what I need. And I love and appreciate NHS so much, but yeah.
I feel that the mental health services are still so lacking because they're still very tunnel vision about a lot of perspectives. I know I've initially, when I went into therapy, I did hypnotherapy. It was the only thing that kind of resonated with me at the time. And then the therapy I kind of delved into last year was more so based around like yoga and meditation and more spiritual styles of healing, which, you know, even silly things like journaling or just taking the time to just have 5 minutes for myself when I live such a million miles an hour life. And it's crazy how many options there are out there that we're not exposed to. And specifically going into the ADHD kind of world, I did a bit of research and it's crazy how like little is known, mm-hmm, about it and how difficult it is to diagnose in women specifically.
Yeah, 100%. I want to say like late last year, all I knew about ADHD is that, oh yeah, little boys at school tend to be disruptive and loud. And
yeah,
like that is kind of the thing that most people know about, and we don't really hear much else about
it. The term is used so flippantly as well, isn't it? It's like, yeah, oh, don't be so ADHD, or it's thrown around as if it's a descriptive, and it's not, because you wouldn't do the same with depression, or, well, I know people do, but people are becoming more mindful of using those as like flippant descriptors, and actually they need to catch up a bit with the ADHD sector as well.
Yeah, and it's such a complex sort of, I don't know if disorder is the right word, because it isn't really a disorder. Like, it's more of a difference in cognition, mm-hmm, to like the norm, but it's literally affects like every single area of people's lives. So yeah, the sort of knowledge of ADHD is still very much lacking in the general population. So that was myself included a few months ago. So it wasn't until,
yeah, of course,
I started properly looking into it at the start of this year that my life has just kind of been changed, and realize that, oh my god, like this is exactly what I've been feeling my whole life, but I just had no idea, because I just thought that, oh, this is, you know, I'm just a person that gets easily distracted and it's like I'm just lazy, but then somehow random days I'll be like extremely productive, and
yeah,
and then now I'm realizing that I was just going through like phases of hyper focus, or, you know, just like the distraction bit is very sort of common and known about. But yeah, and also learning that in women and girls it's more common to have inattentive side of ADHD.
Oh, that's interesting.
ADHD, it comes in sort of like three variants, if you will. style. So there's like the hyper and then combined, which is both hyper and inattentive, and an inattentive type, which used to be known as ADD. So little girls and women tend to be more inattentive, and therefore we don't really like cause trouble at school. And we will end up spacing out and like not really listening, or like not being able to comprehend what we're reading when we're reading books and things like that. So because of that, because we don't tend to cause trouble and be disruptive, it doesn't tend to be noticed as quickly.
Yeah, it gets lost.
Yeah, like she gets by at school, like it's fine, you know, she's not disrupting anyone. But yeah, learning about it has been really life-changing. I'm looking forward to finally seeing a psychotherapist, or I guess the psychotherapist that runs the assessment. But I'm still waiting for my assessment. It's just a very long process.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm on a waiting list.
Oh, bless you. It's so frustrating. I feel like everything's taking even longer now with we're still in that kind of easing out of this COVID world that we've lived in. But I'm glad that I think there is something really freeing in like being able to identify with something or having something that kind of explains why you're feeling. Because I feel like we're the kind of people that we both are. We internalize everything and think it's our fault, or that we're weird, or there's something wrong with us. And actually, there's nothing wrong. It's just you're wired a bit differently, and that's totally okay.
And it's about learning once you have an answer and sort of like an explanation to why you are the way you are now able to learn about how you can manage that and how to work with it, how to structure your environment to work with you and not against you, because it's not completely counterproductive for people with conditions like ADHD to be holding themselves to the sort of like normal world neurotypical standard when it's just, it doesn't work for us. But then like we can still achieve a lot and be really successful if we make small changes to our lifestyle and our surroundings by making it more friendly to our brains.
I love that so much. And I feel like you're really embodying that and have really created this world that nourishes you and who you are rather than not. It's all a facade.
No, like I have my moments where things work okay, but honestly, like 90% of the time, my life is recently during COVID and lockdown and stuff, it has been a fucking struggle. And that's why I've started to properly look into this, because I was just not managing. Like, if I'm able to get 1 or 2 hours of work done in a day, then that's a successful day for me right now. Like, my mind literally does not work most of the time. I want treatment.
And small steps. It's the small wins, isn't it? I don't have ADHD, but I also can relate to life being the embodiment of chaos. I'm like a Labrador on Smarties most of the time. And you know, and sometimes like everything crumbles at once and you're just like, really, are we doing this? Like, can one thing crumble at one time so I can deal with that, build that bit of the Lego that's broken, rather than the entire thing crashing and burning and then me being like, because I'm the worst in that when everything crashes and burns, I just watch it and I don't do anything. I'm just like, okay, like, brilliant. Anyone want a coffee? Let's go for brunch. Like, just going to ignore it completely. Yeah, I feel like, I think my motto for adulting is just brunch your life away. Everything can be solved with avocado toast, right? And that actually links really beautifully into my final question, which is the best advice you've ever been given, because adulting sucks and I don't think people talk about it enough. We all pretend that we're fine and we're doing fine and we present this version of inverted commas fine, when actually we're all just like, help. The Friends theme tune always comes to my head, but I find along the way, like, my friends give me these little nuggets of advice, or I hear something somewhere that really resonates with me, so I want to create a little collection of advice in this little podcast world. So can you share yours?
This might be an interesting one.
Oh gosh, go on, hit me.
One thing that comes to mind is, this is maybe like 4 years ago now, I was very sort of like unsure with what I wanted to do with my life, and being quite unhappy at my job at the time. And I bumped into my old friend just like randomly on the street somewhere. And we just started chatting, and I told her, like, oh, I'm really not sure about what I should do next. And her advice to you was like, Kasia, always quit your job. Like, that was the advice. I was like, what do you mean? Oh my God. And she's like, honestly, like, you can do it on your own. Like, you don't need a job. And I was like, okay. Like, I thought it was a bit strange at first, but then I went home and thought about it. And it stuck with me for a few weeks before I actually came to terms with the fact that, you know what, like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to quit my job. And I had, I think, like, maybe enough money to last me for 2 months, I think, to pay rent, food and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to do it. Like, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to give myself a full month to give my 100% to being a freelancer. And if I don't start making any money by the end of that month, and I'm going to see, like, look, it's going to look like I'm going to get myself in trouble. Mm-hmm. Just go and get a job as another waitress somewhere.
Yeah.
Because that, like, I always thought was quite easy for me to get a job like that because a lot of experience and there's so many restaurants. So I was like, we're going to do it. So I handed in my notice.
I love that.
My ass off for the first month and managed to make a start on the freelance life, and I've never looked back.
Right. I think sometimes we really do have to light the fire under our ass to get things going. And I actually really, as dramatic as the advice is, like, just quit your job, like, the message behind it is that you can always get another job, right? There's always going to be a job there. You can find a way to make money. Like, it might not be in your dream job, but like you said, there's always a waitressing job. There's always, you know, a way to earn an income.
What you kind of, like, need to remember, and what I realized very quickly, is that when you do quit your job and say you work 40 hours a week plus 2 hours each day on commute, if you go 1 hour each way, that frees you up with like 50 hours every week that you've got that time to figure out how to make your money.
That's so true.
It's a lot of time. Like, you can be on your computer and, like, looking for random things, or you can start making things, selling them on Etsy or selling things on eBay, or I don't know, like, I was, at the time when I first quit my job, I was doing random gigs at festivals as a dancer and was like,
I remember this.
Yeah. Like, I used to work as a unicorn.
I love your, I mean, like, goals. I want to see your CV and I want to see on there unicorn.
I used to, like, dress up as a unicorn and go to dance parties and just dance and look fabulous because, you know how people are at parties. Like, they tend to be shy to get on the dance floor when there's no one there. So, like, we'd be the first people out having the best time and then just, like, drag people onto the dance floor. I'm like, come on, dance with us. That was my job. Like,
that's incredible.
I did, like, random things like that until I was able to have enough of a client base and my clothing brand was doing well enough that I didn't have to do those, like, odd gigs and jobs here and there.
Yeah. And then eventually you filter it down.
I remember, like, working at Betchfest or something for some random food company, being like, oh yeah, I'm working here for the next 2 days. And that would be like 10 pounds an hour. So the job, be there for like 10, 12 hours a day. Like, that's something. Like, that's almost like a week.
Yeah.
As a waitress, if I work somewhere else.
So, yeah, it's so true. And it's so important what you said about the time as well, because I think it's so easy to make excuses in busy, especially because most people do work a 9-to-5 life. And like you said, commuting, like, some people do have up to an hour commute. And when I first moved to London, I used to do a 40-minute commute every day. And you lose all motivation and desire to change. It's almost like it's easier to sit in that cozy little hell that you've created than it is to make the change and move. So I actually think that's great advice. Like, just chuck it in the fuck it bucket and move on.
Believe in yourself. Like, there's a lot that you can do with your time to make some kind of income if you're worried about that.
And for those that don't follow you, this is your time to self-plug. Where can people find you? All of your handles, what's up and coming for Carewares?
So my brand's Instagram, I mainly use Instagram. I don't have enough attention span for all the other social media.
Me either. Insta's where it's at.
It's where it's at. So Carewares Instagram is care that wears.
Fabulous.
My personal Instagram is just Kasia Ring, which is spelled KSIARING. So Kasia Ring.
Such a gorgeous name.
Oh, thank you. And that's where you can find me.
It's where we can hit you up and you can buy all of her incredible designs that I'm definitely going to be racing you all for, because I want the oat milk t-shirt. I'm here for it.
Now, maybe that will be our reason to finally grab a coffee somewhere and I can
in person. I know. I can't wait. It's been so long. I just want to squish you. I feel like the last time I saw you was like on like Primrose Hill or like at Wild Food Cafe or something. Such a throwback. So incredible to see like how much you have blossomed and really grown into who you are. And
oh, it changed so much. Girl when I first met you.
Yeah, I was, oh God, I was a lost little soul, bless me. I was doing the best with what I knew at the time, but yes, very lost soul. But I guess that's what this podcast is about. It's about figuring out. I'm so lucky to know so many incredible people that are so connected with who they are. Even though they're still figuring stuff out, you're so connected with who you are. And I think that's so important. And I think that's what people should focus on as they go and approach their late 20s, 30s onwards, is just figure out who you are and who you want to be, rather than ticking off the dream job, the marriage, the kids, etc., etc. Actually just being your authentic self, I think, is the best way to live. And then come to London and party with us all, because it's fun.
Yeah. Amazing. I'll speak to you soon then.
Bye, lovely.
To stay in the know on Jeans and a Nice Top podcast, follow us on Instagram at Jeans and a Nice Top Pod, and make sure to hit that follow and subscribe button for the latest drops and guest reveals. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you on next week's episode, Podditors.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.